Radio 4 Manchester. Saturday Night Theatre. We present John Westbrook, John Bennett, and Norman Shelley in Hornblower and the Crisis. C.S. Forrester's last and uncompleted novel has been adapted for radio by Val Gielgud, who now introduces the play.
In 1967, the last of C.S. Forrester's Hornblower novels was published. Entitled Hornblower and the Crisis, its completion was prevented by the author's death. The background of the tale is laid during the 6 months in 1805, which preceded the Battle of Trafalgar, and the story hinges on forged orders involving Hornblower in a lonely and dangerous mission. Fortunately, what was written of the story breaks off at a natural narrative climax, and it is to this climax that my adaptation of the book leads up. The success of the previous radio adaptations of what may not unreasonably be called the Hornblower Saga persuaded the BBC that this last word from Forrester dealing with his hero should be made available to listeners. For me, it was a labor of love. I can only hope that I may have done the subject justice. Hornblower and the Crisis.
This story belongs to the year which is perhaps of all years the most famous in British naval history, the year 1805. I was still aboard Hotspur, belonging to the inshore squadron of the fleet under Admiral Cornwallis, engaged in the blockade of Brest. But my command was at an end. I had been ordered home to take up my posting as captain. Hotspur awaited the arrival of her new commander, and I was taking leave of the officers and crew with whom I had shared some of the most eventful experiences of my life. To be quite honest, what most affected me was the prospect of bidding farewell to Lieutenant Bush. We had been together in good times and bad. I owed him more than I'd ever been able to say. I felt somehow guilty that I was thinking of Plymouth and Whitehall, of England and the Admiralty, of my new commission, rather than of Bush, whose obvious gloom, so I flattered myself, arose less from the thought of a new superior officer than of losing the society of my unworthy self, Horatio Hornblower.
Come in. Yes, Mr. Bush. I was expecting you.
Water hoy coming alongside, sir.
Very well.
And the new captain's on board, sir.
Thank you. So, now you have a few moments to spare for me, Mr. Bush. It's a change after your preoccupation of the last 2 days.
It's hardly fair, that, sir. I've had my duties to do.
Getting Hotspur into apple pie order for her new captain, eh?
Yes, sir.
Fair enough. After all, I'm only a back number in Hotspur now.
Don't say that, sir.
I'm glad to see you're only human after all, Mr. Bush. Sometimes I've doubted it. There couldn't be a more perfect first lieutenant.
Well, that's very good of you, sir. Very kind indeed. But it's all been your doing.
Say no more about that, Mr. Bush. It's time for me to appear on deck. So we'd better say goodbye here in my cabin. Let me wish you the best of luck under your new commander.
Thank you.
And now, aloft to welcome Captain Meadows, Mr. Bush. Welcome aboard Hotspur, Mr. Meadows.
Thank you, Mr. Hornblower.
Bravo!
Orders from Admiral Cornwallis. I, William Cornwallis, Vice Admiral of the Red, Knight of the Most Honorable Order of the Bath, commanding His Majesty's ships and vessels of the Channel Fleet.
You there! You think we have all
to James
three?
Meadows, Esquire.
Who
the devil's that?
Let's have some hands, come up.
master of the water hoy, sir.
I can see that for myself.
The name's Battleson, I believe, sir.
Don't I know it? I don't like his manner.
Nor I, sir. Can I tell him to lay off until...
No, Mr. Bush. We need that water, and the wind may shift within the hour. I relieve you formally, Mr. Hornblower.
I regret the display of bad manners by that fellow in the hoy, Mr. Meadows.
No, it can't be helped. Get some sturdy hands to the pumps, Mr. Bush.
Aye, sir. Mr. Prowers!
Aye, aye, sir.
Detail 8 men to rig the pumps.
Battleston's been my cross for the last 2 days, Mr. Hornblower. Damn him. He's not only captain of that hoy, he's under Navy office contract. Can't press him. Can't press his men. They're all under protection, blast them. Says what he likes, does what he likes. I'd give my prize money for the next 10 years to have him at the gratings just for 10 minutes.
That's cheerful. I have to take passage to England aboard him.
Then I hope you fare a deal better than I did on the outward passage, Mr. Hornblower.
The ship's papers are ready in my... in your cabin, Miss Meadows, when you have time to attend to them.
Thank you.
May I request the loan of a hand from Mr. Bush to transfer my dunnage to the hoy?
Of course. And good luck to you.
Pump away, then.
Stay up, back, Stuart.
I've arranged for the transferring of your dunnage, sir.
Thoughtful of you, Mr. Bush, but sir, no longer. I'm nobody now, not even a passenger. No standing. This swell, I don't care for the look of that gangplank.
Yes, you may have to jump for it, sir.
Well, it won't be for the first time. Your hand, Bush.
Yeah. And all the luck in the world!
Made it. Just. Are you the master of this vessel?
Master of the hoy, princess. The name's Battleston.
I'm Captain Hornblower. I'm to be given passage to England.
Oh, you are, are you? You have your warrant?
I have.
Cabin food a guinea a day, Mr. Hornblower. Or you can compound for 3 guineas for the passage.
But I thought... I see. Very well, then. 3 guineas.
As you like.
Why have you stopped your pot, sir? We can take 2 more tons.
2 more you won't get. We're sucked dry.
That means only 40 days' water for Hotspur, Mr. Battleston.
Is that any concern of yours, Mr. Hornblower?
No. No, of course not. No longer.
Very well, then. Stand by the lines there to cast off. Jib halyards, lift and stow, fend off.
Stow, fend off.
Bye, sir.
Goodbye, Bush. I wonder if we shall ever meet again.
I found existence aboard Princess exceedingly uncomfortable. She was hardly more weatherly than a raft. With any east in the wind, her chances of working up to Plymouth seemed slim. I had nothing to do on board, nothing to read. And for 2 days, I lingered on the verge of my infernal seasickness. There was little consolation in the fact, which soon became apparent, that I should be eating Battleston's cabin food for many more than 3 days. I was given a hammock in a compartment 6 feet square and 5 feet high. And I thought of my cot in Hotspur as a luxury much to be regretted. We still lay off Ushant on the 3rd day. And as I came on deck, I was surprised when Battleston came hurrying to meet me and handed me his telescope. Take a look at that, Mr. Hornblower. Quite a sight.
Yes, by George. 4 frigates in the lead. 2 columns of line of battleships.
A whole fleet. That's Prince of Wales, 98. Vice Admiral Sir Robert Calder, Baronet, and 2 other flags.
Diamond, 32, leading. Oh, I wish...
They have a fair wind for the west.
The Straits or the West Indies, do you think?
Oh, I think no further than Finisterre.
Why, Mr. Battleson?
Villeneuve's the why. You must have heard he's broken out of the Mediterranean, given Nelson the slip run for the West Indies.
And so?
Oh, I heard in the dockyard. He's heading back for France, making for Brest. Going to join up with the French squadron there. That's Boney's plan. Then up channel to cover Boney's army that's waiting at Boulogne, and Boney counts on eating his next dish of frogs in Windsor Castle.
But Nelson?
On Villeneuve's tail. It's my guess if Nelson can't catch him, Calder will. Boney will have to wait a long time before he sees French topsails in the channel. A sloop came in from Nelson while we were waiting in Plymouth for a wind. No need to worry.
I'm not worrying. Why should I? We can deal with Boney when the time comes.
Watch what you're doing there. Stick in that slack basket. Keep her falling by. You want us to end up in Spain? We're an empty water hoy, and you ham-fisted rascal let the box the compass.
For all my words to Battleston, in fact, I was worrying. Here was the crisis of the naval war approaching. Battles would be certain, and I had no ship. Only the promise of being made post when I could call upon the Admiralty to redeem its promise. Within the week, Calder might intercept Villeneuve, or Bonaparte might attempt his crossing of the Channel. Better to be a mere commander with a ship than an ungazetted captain without one. It was enough to drive a man frantic. Yet I knew I should have had more sense with my experience than to fret myself into a fever over contrary winds. Yet so it was. The very devil, and no help for it. And then, next day I went on deck again to find that during the night the wind had changed. The Princess had been returned to the heart of Cornwallis's blockading squadron.
Captain Hornblower?
Yes?
From the flagship, sir. Midshipman Grant. I have a message for you, sir, from the captain of the fleet.
Captain Henry Bowden?
Yes, sir.
Pray deliver it, Mr. Grant.
You are requested and required to attend as witness at your peril upon the court-martial to be held at 9 o'clock in the forenoon of this 20th day of May, 1805, in the cabin of HMS Hibernia, to try Captain James Percival Meadows,
what?
The officers and ship's company of His Majesty's late sloop Hotspur.
Late sloop?
For the loss of the said vessel by stranding during the night of the 18th day of May. A boat will be sent for you, Captain Hornblower.
Very well, Mr. Grant. Any lives lost, do you know?
I believe not, sir.
Thank you. Acknowledged, Captain Bowden.
Aye, aye, sir.
So Meadow put out his shawl. Didn't waste much time.
Ah, Mr. Hornblower, I hear your old command's lost on the Black Rock.
Aground, I believe. I don't know where.
If the bottom of the sea's aground, she's aground. She touched on a falling tide, hold herself, filled, and rolled off on the flood.
You're well informed, Mr. Battleston.
Well, keep my ears open. I hear you are giving evidence.
I am.
Well, if the wind backs westerly, I'll have to sail without you. I'll put your chest ashore at Plymouth.
How exceedingly kind of you. As I have to attend the court-martial, I shall be glad of my breakfast while I'm waiting for the boat.
Oh, certainly. I hope you enjoy it, Mr. Hornblower.
I have always detested a court-martial. I find it especially distasteful to enter that cabin in Hibernia. To see the anxiety on the faces of Meadows and Bush and the others of Hotspur's crew as they faced the seven captains glittering in full uniform where they sat under the ship's stern windows.
The court now wishes to address a few questions to you, Captain Hornblower. Later you may be asked by the defendants to explain your answers.
Yes, sir.
You handed over command of the sloop Hotspur in the forenoon of the 17th of May, I understand.
Yes, sir.
Her material condition was good?
Reasonably so, sir.
Do you mean by that in good condition or bad?
Good, sir.
The compass deviation card was accurate as far as you were aware.
Yes, sir.
You have heard that Hotspur went aground on the Black Rock with a falling tide. Have you any comments to make?
It would be an easy thing to do, sir.
Well, perhaps you'd be so good as to elaborate on that, Captain Hornblower.
Navigational difficulties in the neighborhood of the Black Rock are certainly considerable.
You managed to evade them while you were in command of Hotspur, Captain Hornblower?
I was probably lucky, sir. On this occasion, there had been a prevailing westerly for some days, which changed suddenly, almost within the hour, to a brisk easterly. In such conditions, the ebb tide would be unpredictably fierce, with a disturbing back eddy just inside the rocks. The current might even reverse itself within a cable's length.
Quite so, I follow you.
The breakers off the Black Rock are only visible at low water of spring tides. The lead would give no warning of this. It would not really be so remarkable that a ship keeping station close up to the Goulet should be trapped.
Thank you, Captain Hornblower. Captain Meadows, any questions?
The wind was northeasterly and brisk. The best conditions were assorted by the French. Captain Hornblower?
Certainly.
In those conditions, would you tell the court what was Hotspur's proper station?
As close up to the Goulet as possible.
Ah, thank you.
How long did you command Hotspur on blockade service, Captain Hornblower?
Rather more than 2 years, sir.
And how much of that time did you spend close up to the Goulet? A rough estimate will do.
I suppose half, no, rather one-third of the time.
Thank you. The court will take notice of that answer in relation to Captain Meadows' question. You may retire, Captain Hornblower.
Thank you, sir.
My feelings as I returned on board Princess were mixed. I was relieved to have been spared watching Bush being questioned and cross-examined. But I knew Captain Bowden's reputation as a seaman and harsh disciplinarian, and my anxiety regarding the likely verdict of the court was proportionate. It was not much more than half an hour later that Baddleston brought me news.
I thought you might care to know, Mr. Hornblower, the verdict's guilty.
You seem to have heard about it mighty quick.
Well, I had a call from another of the fleet auxiliaries. She'd been delivering supplies to the flagship.
And the sentence?
Reprimand.
Oh, thank God for that. What kind of reprimand?
Oh, not severe.
Well, that's something, Mr. Battleson.
Well, might have been worse, certainly. Still, with the ship lost, they'll have to apply for re-employment.
With a black mark against their names.
Not the first lieutenant and the sailing master. They were cleared.
The first lieutenant. You're sure of that, Mr. Battleson?
Of course I'm sure. Friend of yours?
Yes. What's that longboat out there up to? Looks as if she might be running in our direction.
Might be. Care for a bet, Mr. Hornblower?
No, thanks.
Oh, pity. I was going to offer you a guinea to a shilling that we're about to receive more company aboard. And here she comes.
Yes, by George. And that's Bush in the stern sheets and Meadows beside him. Maybe a dozen more forward. What the...
Hang friend up on the starboard side there. Bring her into the wind.
Aye, aye, sir!
Boat there, ahoy! What's your business?
Party with warrants for passage. Coming aboard you.
Not so much as a by your leave. Glad to see your friends again, I suppose, Mr. Hornblower.
Yes.
Ship boys!
Glad to see you again, Captain Meadows. And you, Mr. Bush.
Thank you, Mr. Hornblower. And thanks for what you said in the court.
I told them the truth, that was all. Glad if it helped.
It did.
Now, gentlemen, gentlemen, what's all this?
Officers and crew of Hotspur to be returned to England for other appointments.
Well, perhaps you'll be good enough to let me see your warrants of sailing.
Yeah. 14, if you count them.
Huh? There's a lot more than 14 men cluttering up my deck.
Maybe so. I'm only responsible for 14.
Well, where's your authority for the others?
I expect they just want to get home again, Mr. Battleston.
I'm not a common carrier.
Oh, maybe not. Did you ever hear, Mr. Battleston, of a captain of a ship of the line who was asked for his authority for some particular action?
I did not. Why?
The captain just pointed to his guns and said, there. Your crew's outnumbered, Mr. Battleston. There's not much you can do, is there?
Very well. Quarters will be pretty close, even for you gentlemen. Cabin food a guinea a day, or you can compound for 3 guineas for the voyage.
Which I recommend, Captain Meadows.
No, Mr. Battleston. I know the terms of a sailing contract. Ratings are victualled at the rate of 6 pence a day. And on this voyage, you'll victual me and my officers at the same rate, which is all it's worth.
It's sheer piracy, Captain Meadows.
Call it what you like, Mr. Battleston.
Captain Hornblower.
I don't think I'd try to make a fight for it, Mr. Battleston. I know Hotspur's crew. They're a pretty tough lot, and no softer after 2 years odd of blockade service.
Very well, I agree. Under protest. But once in England, I'll see you in the dock, Mr. Captain Meadows.
Incidentally, it's understood that Captain Hornblower travels at the same rate as the rest of us.
I've already paid my 3 guineas, unfortunately.
Have you now? That's, how many sixpences? Mr. Bush?
126, sir.
Exactly. 126 sixpences paid in advance, Mr. Battleson.
Better make a note of it. And now, I suggest we make sail.
You'll be hearing plenty more about this.
On one point, Baddleston had been right. With the new arrivals, Princess was almost intolerably crowded. I slept with Meadows above me, Bush on one side, and a bulkhead on the other. The air was close and poisonous, so that most nights I would crawl out on deck to get a draught of pure wind. Persistent summer breezes still blew from north and east, which might mean splendid, sparkling summer weather, but also fury and frustration for men who had not seen their homes for so long. Princess was not a happy ship, with her passengers inclined to snarl at each other, and continual dispute whether she might not reach westward into the Atlantic in hope of a favorable slant, or continue to beat patiently where she was.
What do you make her course now, Mr. Bush?
Northeast, sir.
And you, Mr. Prowse?
Northeast by east, sir.
Always the pessimist, Mr. Prowse.
Well, she's making a lot of leeway, sir. We're getting no nearer towards Plymouth.
We might pick up a westerly slant at the mouth of the channel.
We can always hope. Now, look at those clouds building up. We've seen nothing like that for days.
Hope's cheap enough, sir.
I'd like to know what the glass is doing. Maybe it's dropping.
Oh, I shouldn't be surprised. Wind's freshening, too. Something may come of it.
Just another point or two is all we need.
We've still got to give Ushant a wide berth, sir.
Steers like a dray.
Like a wooden pig in, Mr. Bush. Sideways as easily as forwards.
By George, sir, we're running a point free.
You're right, Mr. Bush. Getting free of the French coast at last. Once into the channel, and we'll have some freedom of action. She may be a tubby old lady, Princess, but she's beginning to kick up her legs.
Captain Meadows doesn't seem any more cheerful, sir. Standing there by the mainmast by himself. Not a word to throw to a dog.
Return to England doesn't mean to him what it means to the rest of you, Mr. Bush. I can guess what he's feeling. Ah, here comes the rain. You two had best get under shelter. I'll have a word with Captain Meadows. Plymouth, within a day or two, if this holds, don't you think, Captain Meadows?
Should do, Mr. Hornblower.
I'd say we were in for a bit of a blow.
Maybe.
Might have to run for Torbay instead.
Likely enough.
You have my sympathy in your trouble, Captain Meadows.
Thanks. Good of you.
Sail ho! 2 points on the weather bow!
I wonder... A brig, I'd say.
You're right. She's a Frenchman, my God. Look at that white sheen about her canvas, the spacing of her masts. A
prize, more than likely, sir, in these waters. Taken from the French and put into our service.
I don't like the looks of her. Where the devil's Baddleston?
Just coming on deck.
Where are your eyes, Mr. Baddleston? Bring the ship about, damn you.
I'll give my own orders, if you don't mind, Mr. Meadows. Quartermaster there. Helm hard over. Bring her about. Smartly now.
Helm hard over, aye, aye, sir.
Not too badly done.
Look at the brig's ports, Captain Hornblower. You can see her guns. She's a ship of war, and we'll sag right down on her. Take a pull on that foresheet there.
Avast there. I command this ship. Don't you meddle.
Have you and I to put up with this treatment, Captain Hornblower?
We have.
Fighting men, naval officers.
No, Mr. Meadows. Legally, we're no more than passengers in this ship. Mr. Baddleston's in command.
Thank you.
Well, I'll be damned. Look. See her colors.
Frenchy. I thought so.
One of their new fast brigs, worth two of ours.
Are you going to fight her, Mr. Baddleston?
Not while I can run.
If she gets up to us, with our deck crowded as it is, it'll be murder.
It should be dark before she's in range, with any luck.
That's small enough. Oh, God.
Do you think I want to rot in a French jail? This hoy's all I have. Wife and children will starve.
Mr. Baddleston, we've 30 men aboard. The French won't think you've got more than half a dozen.
We could board her, by God.
Dad, do you think they'll let us alongside? One spin of his wheel at the last moment, an order to luff, and the French captain could sweep our deck with grape. Bloody massacre, that's what it'd be. And they'll have some 90 men aboard.
We'll need total, complete surprise. I believe it can be done. Get down out of sight, all of you. No man to show himself. Get down and stay down.
Mr. Hornblower.
Better not show our hand until we want to play it out. With a glass, they'll soon be able to see from the brig that we're crowded with men.
You admitted just now, Mr. Hornblower, that I was in command of Princess.
Legally, yes. If the three of us quarrel now on the issue, we shall probably end in a French prison. Is that what you want?
No.
Then someone had better give the orders who knows what war means.
Yourself, Mr. Hornblower.
It was in my mind.
If anyone gives the orders, Mr. Battleston, it will be me. I'm the senior, Mr. Hornblower. I was a gazetted commander in May 1800. You, I believe, in April 1803.
That is correct, sir.
Very well. Now, I trust we all understand each other.
I must beg your pardon, Captain Meadows. It was thoughtless of me.
Granted.
The brig's still head reaching us, Blaster. Weathering on us, too.
We've no colors hoisted, Mr. Battleston.
Ah, no need as yet. It leaves our hands free.
It'll be dark before long.
What arms have we aboard?
Oh, half a dozen pistols and cutlasses.
Half a dozen?
We could get a few more, you know.
More? How?
They'll send a boat and a prize crew to board us, unless I'm much mistaken. In the dark,
my God, you're right, Mr. Hornblower. Don't hoist those colors, Mr. Battleston. We'll get out of this after all. We'll take her, or I'm a Dutchman.
Oh, we can try.
And we'll succeed. I may be under a cloud after Hotspur sinking, but if I bring in a prize when I reach England...
You'll reach the captain's list before me, Mr. Meadows.
Come along, Mr. Battleston, come along. Let's get the hands tilled off. We've work to do.
We were entering upon a wild and reckless enterprise, but we were all desperate men. I could hardly point out that the plan we would carry out had been devised by me, and that I would have acted on it, danger or no danger, had I been in command of Princess. In fact, when it came to the point, the first part of the plan worked with amazing smoothness. The French sent a boat alongside, and each man of its crew, as he boarded, was struck down neatly and silently before he could appreciate danger or shout a warning. It was ruthless, bloody work, in the dark with cold steel. But it was necessary.
Oh, that's a lot of them, I think. Light that lantern by the forestay. You there, Hornblower?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Bush?
Yes, sir.
Ah, now we can see what we're doing. Oh, what have we got, Mr. Bush?
Arms for seven, sir.
Oh, better than nothing. Come along forward, longboat party. Get started, Hornblower.
Aye, aye, sir.
All the Frenchmen safely overboard, Mr. Bush?
And safely dead, sir. Not a nice business.
No. Had to be done, all same.
Of course it had to be done. And now we've got to carry the brig, and we've not time to waste. Get on with it, Hornblower.
Aye, aye, sir.
You shouldn't have too much trouble. They'll be expecting the return of their own boat. I shall be able to see you board against the light of their lanterns. As soon as I do, I'll bring my party up the other side.
I understand, sir.
My men will use pistols. Yours will not. I don't want us firing into each other. You'll go with Mr. Hornblower, Mr. Bush. And good luck to you.
Aye, aye, sir.
Longboat crew there, ready to cast off.
First, all went well. Too well to last, it seemed to me. The French were completely surprised. Many were unarmed. None of them realized how few their attackers were. But a number bolted down the hatchway. How many, I did not know at the time. I thought it best, while we cleared the deck of survivors, to get the hatch cover on and batten it down. The job had just been finished when I came face to face with Captain Battleston. His face was black with powder, and he was breathing hard.
Almost settled, I think, Mr. Hornblower.
Almost. Where's Captain Meadows?
He's a goner.
Dead?
As mutton. He cornered the French captain. The frog put his rapier through him just as Meadows slashed him almost in half with his cutlass. Ah, messy.
Any orders, sir? Captain Meadows is dead.
I know. Take your orders from Captain Battleson now. Glad to see you safe, Mr. Bush.
They're trying to bash up the hatch cover, sir.
Sounds like it. Go for it, Mr. Bush, and deal with it.
Aye, aye, sir.
We can keep them down there, all right.
Can we? There must have been a whole watch below when we boarded. That would explain so little resistance. It means more than 50 Frenchmen still below, alive and kicking. I'd better take the wheel.
Do that.
She feels queer somehow.
Huh?
I can't... Ah. Well, look there. She's suddenly spun free.
Damn it. They must have cut the tiller ropes down below. What the devil? They can't break through the deck.
Look at that hole. They're firing musket balls from below. Stand clear.
They guess there'll be someone standing by the wheel. And from the sound of it, they're using axes on that scuttle aft.
No good, Battleston. We'll have to leave her.
Then we'll burn her. Set her alight before we go.
We can't do that.
Not? Why not?
We can't leave 50 men or more to burn alive or jump from the fire to drown. Not in cold blood.
My blood's not cold, Mr. Hornblower.
You'll not do it all the same, Mr. Battleston. We can leave her a wreck. Cut the gears, cut the halyards, cut the forestay, if you like.
Oh, very well, but you're too soft-hearted. Mr. Bush!
Me, sir?
I want enough men to guard the hatch cover and the scuttle aft. The rest to cut the gears, halyards, and forestay and do all the other damage they can. Can you do it?
Aye, aye, sir.
Satisfied now, Mr. Hornblower?
Not quite. I want the ship's log and papers. They'll be in the captain's cabin.
We'll best not be long about it.
Give me 5 minutes.
We can't have much left in the way of powder and ball, and they'll soon put pay to the hatch cover.
I know. Tell Bush to look at the guns on deck. If one's charged, swing it to bear on the hatchway and load with canister. That'll hold the French quiet till we can get clear. I'd be glad if you'd wait for me.
Well, 5 minutes, you said, Mr. Hornblower. Not a second more. Mr. Bush.
Sir?
Get some men on the ropes of that gun carriage and have it drawn over here.
Aye, aye, sir. Jenkins!
Sir!
Bear a hand!
Aye, sir!
Quick about it now! The rope through those sheaves!
Aye, sir.
And heave! Heave!
That's it, Mr. Bush. Now, point her muzzle directly at that hatch. It's canister that'll do the trick. Ram it home, Mr. Gurney.
Get a coin under her. She's not pointing down enough. Muzzle's too proud by far.
Fired and loaded, sir.
Then get down in the boats, all of you.
I'd better stay with you, Mr. Battleson.
You will get down into your boat with your party.
As you wish, Mr. Bush, to your boat.
We're not a moment too soon either, Mr. Gurney. Stand aside and give me that lanyard. This'll stop them breaking out.
It was queer, almost unreal. To step ashore on English ground again at Plymouth. There was quite a crowd gathered to see us land. A water hoy, which had captured, and for a little actually held possession of a French brig of war, was something very new. I even felt a certain regret that I was saying farewell to Captain Battleston.
I've arranged for your chest and ditty bag to be brought ashore, Mr. Hornblower.
Thank you. There's something I must say to you, Captain Battleston.
Goodbye. Or do you think I overcharged you for your passage?
Not that.
Well?
You know I got the French brig's papers. I have them here.
What of them?
It's your duty to hand them over to the authorities. You're legally bound to do so. As a king's officer, I must see that it's done.
Then why not do it, Mr. Hornblower?
It's a prize of war. And you were acting captain at the time of capture.
What should I want with worthless paper? I'm thinking of the £10,000 we left behind. Better hand those papers over yourself, Mr. Hornblower. They may be worth something to you.
Certainly they may be.
And I repeat, I don't want the damn things. Goodbye to you.
Goodbye, Captain Battleston. Boy, you there.
You want me, sir?
You want to earn a shilling?
I do that.
You know Driver's Alley?
Yes, sir.
Here's sixpence and a letter.
You said a shilling, sir.
You run all the way to Driver's Alley and give this letter to Mrs. Hornblower. Can you remember the name?
Hornblower. Is that it? You said a shilling, sir.
Here's sixpence. You'll get the other sixpence from Mrs. Hornblower when you give her the letter. Now, run!
Yes, sir.
Why there, Captain Hornblower.
So there you are, Mr. Bush. It seems only a few days ago that I said goodbye to you. Now I have to do so again. Oh, a good deal has happened since then.
It certainly has, sir.
I said before that I hoped we might meet again. I say it now, Mr. Bush. And I want to add my thanks for what you very well know. I hope you'll convey them to all the others who sailed with me in Hotspur.
It's we who have to thank you, sir.
Perhaps you'll have time for a word with Mrs. Hornblower. I sent her a message. I have to visit the Port Admiral's office, but she should be at the dockyard gate in about a quarter of an hour.
With pleasure, sir.
Will you tell her that I shan't keep her waiting longer than is absolutely necessary?
Of course, sir.
You might even give her my love, Mr. Bush, if you can find the appropriate words. I wish to see the Port Admiral, if you please.
Oh, I'm his flag lieutenant. Duncan's the name. Yours, sir?
Hornblower, carrying documents captured from the enemy.
From the brig Gwep, I imagine.
Oh, yes.
The Port Admiral will see you at once. Admiral Foster, Harry Foster, known generally in the fleet as Dreadnought.
I know him, slightly.
I believe he knows you.
I doubt it.
You were being examined for lieutenant one night at Gibraltar, the night the Spaniards sent fireships in. The Admiral, well, he was then captain, was one of the examining board. His memory is excellent. Captain Hornblower to see you, sir.
Oh, I've been expecting you, Captain Hornblower.
May I ask why, sir?
Well, I heard of the capture of that French brig. I know something of your record. So, I imagine you have her papers.
I have, sir.
Good. Not everyone would have had the sense to bring them away, Captain Hornblower, but I thought I could rely on you.
Thank you, sir.
Quite an exploit, that capture, I understand. But these papers are the important thing. Let me see. Log, daybook, station bill, quarter bill, victualling returns. What about this?
Cased in lead, sir. I thought it might be valuable.
Yes, it well might. What would you say S.E. stands for?
S.E.? Son Excellence. His Excellency, sir.
And then this is addressed to His Excellency, the Captain General of Martinique?
The Windward Islands, sir.
Yes. Yes, on consideration, I don't think I'd better meddle. This is best left to their lordships of the Admiralty. You intend going to London, of course, Captain Hornblower?
Yes, sir.
You want a ship, I believe.
I do, sir. Admiral Cornwallis named me for promotion last month.
Very well. This will save you time and money. Flags? Flags?
Sir?
Captain Hornblower will need a postchaise.
Aye, sir.
Have it at the gate immediately. And have a travel warrant made out for London.
Aye, sir.
For London, sir. For me.
And that's what I said. 17 guineas this will cost King George, bless him. Aren't you grateful for his bounty, Captain Hornblower?
Of course, sir.
Every day, sometimes 10 times a day, I have officers coming in here, even admirals, trying to get travel warrants for London. The excuses I've heard. And you seem not to care.
Of course, I'm delighted, sir. Greatly obliged, too.
No need to be obliged to me. These papers decided me.
Yes, sir.
Their lordships should think them worth 17 guineas. You know, I'm not doing this for your sweet sake, Captain Hornblower.
Naturally not, sir.
And I'll give you this note to Mr. Secretary Marsden. Otherwise, you'll have trouble getting past the doorkeeper in Whitehall.
Postchaise will be at the gates in 5 minutes, sir.
Very well. Seal this, if you please, then give it to Captain Hornblower.
Aye, aye, sir.
You know you'll be pestered for news at every relay. What's Nelson doing? Has Boney crossed yet? They discuss Villeneuve and Calder the way they used to discuss Tom Cribb and Jem Belcher.
Cribb? Belcher, sir?
Ah, of course, you've been at sea. They are about to dispute the heavyweight championship of England.
Ah.
Just as well some people have had other things to think about.
Your letter, Captain Hornblower. You'll find your baggage already in the chaise.
Well, a pleasant journey to you, Captain Hornblower.
Thank you, sir.
Horry. Oh, Horry, Horry, darling. There you are at last.
I'll be with you in a moment, driver. Good to see you, Maria, my dearest.
And here's your son. Look how he's growing up. He runs about all day long. Smile at your daddy, my puppet.
Yes, he looks well indeed.
How about you, my dear? You don't look as if...
I should hope not, Horry. After all, it's only 3 months.
Will it be a girl this time?
Oh, Horry, not in front of the child.
Oh, I'm sorry, my dear. I can't help being interested.
Your clothes. They look so poorly and the coat's crumpled. I'd like to get at it with an iron.
I'm sure of that, my dear. The only thing is...
Oh, you don't have to tell me. I saw your chest and bag being put into the chaise. You're going away again.
I fear so. But only to London.
Not one little moment with us? With me?
I only wish it were possible.
And after London, do you know?
I hope to get a ship. I shall be a captain, remember?
Of course. Hurry, dear. What's this under your ear? It looks like black paint.
Hmm? Oh, very likely. It wasn't easy to get cleaned up on board the hoy. Oh, don't soil your handkerchief, my love.
It won't come off for me. You must use some turpentine as soon as you can.
I will, dear. I promise. Now, goodbye.
Yes, dear. I shall write to you, of course. Mm. Kiss me.
London, and I'm pressed for time.
I have a letter for Mr. Secretary Marsden from Admiral Foster.
Would you please write a note on this form to that effect, sir?
Very well.
The door of the waiting room is the first on the left there, sir.
Ah, thank you. Hornblower is the name.
I hope not to have to keep you waiting long, Captain Hornblower.
So do I.
I think you'll find the chairs quite comfortable, sir. Mr. Marsden should be free very shortly.
Mr. Marsden was not free very shortly. I was given time enough to go to sleep in one of those comfortable chairs. To remember, in a nightmare, the darkness, the screams, the swinging cutlasses aboard the French brig. However, maybe half an hour later, I was awakened by a messenger and conducted to the presence. A lovely, elegant room looking out onto the Horse Guards parade. It struck me how well it suited the secretary to the Lords Commissioners of the Admiralty. A tall and elegant gentleman of middle age, fashionably dressed, his hair tied behind with a ribbon. I admit, I stared, perhaps discourteously, at the man who might have been described as fighting single-handed the war to the death against Bonaparte. It was, after all, to Mr. Marsden, to whom all naval dispatches were addressed. Mr. Marsden, who handled all the executive work of the greatest navy in the world.
I must apologize for having kept you waiting, Captain Hornblower. You will realize there is a considerable press of business in this office.
Of course, sir.
I understand from Admiral Foster's letter that these documents came into your possession when a French brig was taken by the hoy on which you were returning to this country.
Yes, sir. The French brig Guep.
A captain was killed, so the papers are likely to be genuine.
In my opinion, yes, sir. But they can hardly have been planted. The Frenchman could not have expected any counterattack from the Waterhoy Princess.
Quite so. And a spirited piece of work. But you must understand, Captain Hornblower, that Bonaparte would sacrifice any man's life and any ship if he could mislead us in exchange. But, as you say, the circumstances were quite unpredictable. Mr. Dorsey, you've had time to examine the documents. What have you found?
Nothing of much importance, sir, except this lead-covered dispatch.
Well?
Look at this twine, sir. Not tied in Paris, but on the ship. Hmm. And I'd guess the label was written by the captain. And the seals on the envelope, three of those newfangled imperial seals of Bonaparte's good specimens.
Yes. It looks to me as if Captain Hornblower has bought us something valuable. This envelope is the first of its kind to come into our possession.
Yes, I should like to examine the contents carefully, sir, if I may.
Very well, Mr. Dorsey. Kindly attend to it, and then come back. Come in. Oh, yes, Mr. Barrow. You can see I'm busy.
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir. I thought you should see this at once.
Well, give it to me. Let me see you back here, Mr. Dorsey, as quickly as you can manage it.
Yes, sir.
Villeneuve is in Ferrol. Calder fought him off Finisterre. and was given the slip. I don't like the sound of that. The First Lord must see this at once. Well, stay here, Captain Hornblower. You can tell Mr. Barrow of this acquisition of yours.
Oh. And what is this acquisition of yours, Captain Hornblower?
It seems likely, sir, that it's a personal dispatch from Bonaparte.
Ah, then it may be vital, particularly at this moment. Villeneuve has 20-odd ships with him, French and Spanish, enough to cover a crossing by Bonaparte. We lost sight of him for 3 weeks while Nelson was chasing him to the West Indies. If only we had a notion of his future orders. What was the purport of that dispatch of yours?
Mr. Dorsey is dealing with it at this moment, sir.
I see. Dorsey is, of course, expert in dealing with captured documents. It's been his principal business for many years.
Are you permitted to tell me any more of this news of yours, Mr. Barrow?
No harm. It seems that Calder met Villeneuve off Finisterre. They were in action for the best part of 2 days. Then they parted. It was thick weather, apparently.
No prizes?
2 only. Spaniards. Poor result.
And Villeneuve broke through into Ferrol.
He did.
A difficult place to watch.
You know Ferrol, Captain Hornblower?
Fairly well, sir.
Ah.
A prisoner of war there, sir, in 97.
Ah. You escaped?
They set me free.
Exchanged?
No, sir.
Then why?
I helped to save lives in a local shipwreck.
Oh, you did, did you? So you know about conditions in Ferrol?
As I said, sir, fairly well.
You also said it was a difficult port to watch. Why is that?
Well, to begin with, it's a matter of distance. It's not like blockading Brest. Plymouth must be our base in each case, but from Plymouth to Brest is only 50 leagues. To Ferrol, it's more like 200.
So communications and supply would be 4 times as difficult.
More with prevailing westerly winds.
Please go on, Captain Hornblower.
There are even more important factors, Mr. Barrow. A fleet blockading Ferrol has no friendly refuge to leeward. Blockading Brest, we could always run for Torbay in a storm. Blockading Cadiz, we can rely on Lisbon or Gibraltar. Lord Nelson, watching Toulon, could use anchorages on the Sardinian coast.
Quite so.
Off Ferrol, it would be a different story, sir. Westerly gales would drive blockading ships into the cul-de-sac of Biscay. Hostile shores, wild and steep too, with rain and fog. And the exits from Ferrol are much easier than the single one from Brest. Any fleet, no matter what its size, could sortie from Ferrol in a single tide.
You seem to have made good use of your time in Ferrol, Captain Hornblower.
I managed to learn to speak a little Spanish.
Oh, many officers I know would not have taken that trouble.
There is another aspect of the question of Ferrol, sir.
What's that?
Well, the town lies at the end of a long and difficult road, sir, across mountain passes. To support a fleet there under blockade with the necessary stores might be more than the Spaniards could manage.
You know that road?
I was marched over it as a prisoner.
Bonaparte's emperor now, Captain Hornblower. The Spaniards are his abject slaves. If anyone could make them attend to their business, Bonaparte can.
No doubt, sir.
So, we're back to where we've been ever since 95, waiting for the enemy to come out and fight. And in your opinion, Captain, we're in a worse situation than usual.
It is only my opinion, Mr. Barrow.
If only Calder had thrashed Villeneuve, half our troubles would have been over.
Possibly, yes, sir.
Well, it may mean a political crisis. The mob won't be pleased over this business of Calder. He may be accused, like Byng, of not having done his utmost to destroy the enemy. It's tricky, very... Oh, Mr. Marsden is with the First Lord, Mr. Dorsey. What is it?
The dispatch taken by Captain Hornblower, Mr. Barrow. It's important.
Well, I think Captain Hornblower is entitled to know the results of his capture. Well?
I've reproduced the seals, 2 copies of each. There's a seal cutter in Cheapside who can cut a seal from these so that Boney himself couldn't tell the difference. I've lifted the originals without damage, the hot knife method, you understand.
I do, excellent. So, these are the new Imperial seals.
Yes, Mr. Barrow. And the dispatch. It's the greatest of prizes. Look, look at this signature.
Damned scrawl. N-A-P, a flourish and a few ink blots.
Bonaparte's signature for all that. The first of this sort that we've managed to get hold of. Before this, it was always Bonaparte.
He doesn't seem to have adopted the imperial style yet. He calls himself I, not we.
The superscription says Palais des Tuileries and Cabinet Impérial. Up to now, it's always been Cabinet of the First Consul. And here, a translation which I have made.
May I know what it says?
I see no reason why not, Captain Hornblower. It's addressed to General Lauriston in the West Indies. If the British attack you, remember 3 things. Activity, concentration of forces, the firm resolution to die with glory. These are the great principles of war which have brought me success in all my operations. Death is nothing. To live defeated and without glory is to die every day.
It's like a council of despair, sir.
Yes, no mention of sending him reinforcements, I agree. Quite the opposite. Pity. To reinforce the West Indies would have meant risking some of his fleet at sea.
I imagine Boney needs a naval victory in these waters first, sir.
Just so. In which case, we...
So you hear, Mr. Dorsey? Good. Now, this for His Majesty at Windsor. See the courier leaves within 15 minutes. This for Plymouth. This for Portsmouth. Have the copying begun immediately, if you please.
At once, Mr. Marston.
No further messages, Mr. Barrow?
None, sir. This dispatch taken by Captain Hornblower.
Well?
If Mr. Dorsey is right, sir, we are now in a position to imitate a letter from His Imperial and Royal Majesty the Emperor Napoleon.
Mr. Dorsey is seldom wrong. In which case, Captain Hornblower, you may have done a service to your country greater than you know.
I should like to think so, sir.
And why?
I'm a king's officer, sir.
Not because you expect some reward?
I had not thought of it, sir.
The dispatch itself only confirms what we suspected, that Bonaparte does not intend to reinforce Martinique.
But with this as a model, sir.
Yes. Let us have your suggestion, Captain.
With respect, sir. An order to Villeneuve from the Emperor, telling him to sail from Ferrol at all costs. The reason? That the squadron in Brest has escaped and will await Villeneuve at a rendezvous off Cape Clare. Villeneuve would sail instantly, way cut or slip. It could bring about the battle with Villeneuve that England needs.
An ideal solution. If only it could be done. How could such an order be delivered to Villeneuve?
Sir, Boney must send orders from Paris often enough. Those orders would go by road. Boney would never trust Spanish posts.
Not unless he was mad.
So, an officer, one of the Imperial aides-de-camp, would ride with the orders through Spain to Ferrol from the French frontier.
Pray go on.
Captain Hornblower, sir, has been engaged on gathering information from the French coast for the past 2 years. His name was frequently mentioned by Admiral Cornwallis.
I know that, Mr. Barrow. Continue, Captain.
Suppose the dispatch forged, sir. A small party could be landed with it secretly at some spot on the Spanish Biscayan coast, posing as French or Spanish peasants. There will be a succession of imperial couriers from France with orders for Villeneuve. We seize one, kill him, or, with the best of luck, substitute the forged order for the one he is carrying. Or one of the party poses as a French officer and carries the forged letter to Villeneuve.
Ingenious, if a little fantastic.
I have the idea you have more to say, Captain Hornblower.
Again, with respect, sir. Could we measure the value to this country of a victory at sea? It would end Boney's schemes of invasion. It would ease the blockade beyond measure. What would we give for the chance?
I should say millions.
What do we risk? If we fail, we shall have lost 2 or 3 agents. It's a penny ticket in a vast lottery.
You are positively eloquent, Captain Hornblower.
Without intention, sir. I fear I've consumed a great deal of your valuable time.
Oh, sit still, Captain. Sit still, if you please. What's the name of the Spanish fellow who's been haunting our anteroom these last weeks?
Mirandola, something like that.
We can lay our hands on him if we want him.
Oh, easily enough.
And the man, Claudius?
In Newgate, sir. He's to swing next Monday.
Then we've no time to waste. You'll be so good as to leave your address with the doorkeeper, Captain Hornblower.
Certainly, sir.
I shall send for you very shortly. I need not add, I am sure, that you must say nothing of our conversation here.
No doubt, when I left the Admiralty, I should have been puzzling my brains about the secretary's meaning, about my future, about the mysterious Miranda and the equally mysterious Claudius. But I was desperately in need of sleep and food. So weak is the flesh that I only looked forward at that moment to eating myself into a torpor and then to sleep and sleep and sleep. And then I must write a letter to Maria.
Yes, who's that?
Admiralty messenger, sir.
Oh, come in.
Captain Hornblower?
Yes?
The secretary to the Lord's Commissioners, the Admiralty, would be obliged if Captain Horatio Hornblower would attend at the Admiralty today, Tuesday, at 11 o'clock a.m.
Oh, what's the time now?
Not long past 8, sir.
Oh, very well. I shall be there. Well, that'll be all.
Thank you, sir.
I am ashamed to say that my letter to poor Maria had not been written. Indeed, I did not think of it again until I was on board the wherry crossing the Thames on my way to my second meeting with Mr. Marsden.
Seems as that Calder's let the Frenchies give him the slip, Captain.
Bad luck with the weather. We'll know more about it in a day or two.
Cool them and let them go. Nelson wouldn't have done that.
You're knowing what Lord Nelson would have done.
Bony on our doorstep and that Villeneuve at sea. That Calder, he ought to be ashamed. I've heard how they shot that Admiral Byng. That's what they ought to do with Calder.
Bonaparte's not in London River yet.
That ain't funny, that isn't.
Maybe not. It's true. The worst thing Boney's doing this morning is to keep me from my breakfast.
Well, I'm pulling as hard as I can, Captain.
And save your breath for that, if you please.
Good morning, Captain Hornblower.
Good morning to you. I have an appointment with Mr. Marsden.
Oh, yes, Captain. You'll not be kept waiting long this time.
Have you a news sheet?
Morning Post here, sir.
I should like to see what they say of Admiral Calder's engagement. Satisfactory planning by the Admiralty would seem to have effected interception of Villeneuve's squadron by Admiral Calder. It is less satisfactory that Admiral Calder should have failed in his main object, to destroy the enemy. From Ferro, where he now lies, Villeneuve is in a position to renew his stores and water and threaten the command of the Channel. The result must be considered a French success. And in our opinion, some inquiry into the affair is called for. I thought as much.
Mr. Marston will see you now, sir.
I'm obliged to you.
I'm glad to see you again, Captain Hornblower. You may be flattered to hear the First Lord holds much the same opinions regarding Ferrol as you do.
I'm very flattered that Lord Barham himself...
Lord Barham was particularly gratified to know of your familiarity with conditions in Ferrol. Mr. Dorsey, would you kindly bring in the Reverend Dr. Claudius, late of Newgate?
At once, sir.
His figure and gait are against him, Captain Hornblower. I doubt if he will have shaved this morning. For all that, and in spite of his cloth, he is the most accomplished forger in England.
I see, sir.
Well, come in, Dr. Claudius. I will present you to Captain Hornblower here.
I would appreciate the introduction better, Mr. Marsden, if you would have these damned handcuffs taken off my wrists.
I regret, Claudius, but you are only lent to me by the courtesy of the Secretary of State for Home Affairs, and temporarily at that. Of course. If you see your way to agree to what I am going to propose...
A man in the shadow of the gallows is hardly in a position to argue.
I had hoped you would see the matter in that light, Claudius.
I do. What is it you want?
You have been brought here to execute a forgery, if you can.
I find the actions of your government singular, sir. One of its departments condemns me to hang for forging. Another invites me to renew that fascinating activity.
It does, Claudius.
I would prefer to be addressed as doctor. I am still a doctor of divinity. I have not yet been unfrocked.
Rubbish, Claudius.
I suppose it was too much that I should have expected politeness.
Very well. Doctor, your divinity should be given the respect it deserves. And now, Mr. Dorsey, hand that document to the Reverend Doctor with the compliments of their lordships of the Admiralty and ask him if, in the light of his vast experience, he thinks himself capable of making anything similar.
French origin. Obvious. Apart from the language, it is in the standard handwriting of French clerks. I have had plenty of examples through my hands.
And the signature?
Yes, interesting. Written with a turkey quill, I should say. It would call for an hour's practice before I could reproduce it. These seals now... I made moles. I could see that. They have been lifted from the paper with reasonable care. I congratulate you, Mr. Dorsey.
Well?
I could say a good deal more. Before I do so, I need some assurance that my services will not go without adequate recompense.
You have that already. Your execution has been postponed for 1 week.
No, gentlemen. I need my life. I have a rooted objection to hanging. I mean that.
Shall I call in the constable, sir? We don't really need...
Not yet, Mr. Barrow.
Why not? Take me away and hang me tomorrow. If it is coming, the sooner the better. You gentlemen may never know the truth of that statement. I still have charity enough to hope that you never will. It is true for all that. Hang me tomorrow.
You will not hang, Dr. Claudius.
Ah, thank you. Then we are agreed. And I shall give you the benefit of my experience.
Very well.
First of all, then, I take it you have in mind the concoction of a whole letter, not of just a few words.
That is so.
In my opinion, it is impossible to forge a long document in the handwriting of another and to achieve deception. So, it would be better to make no attempt at exact reproduction. Carelessness, on the other hand, would be fatal.
I follow you.
Yes, this script, I fancy, is one which used to be taught in Jesuit schools in France. There are plenty of French refugees here in England. Find one of them to write your letter.
I suggest, sir, that makes good sense.
Quite so, Captain Hornblower. Pray go on, Doctor.
Have your letter composed in French by a Frenchman, Mr. Marston. One of you gentlemen may write good grammatical French, but a Frenchman reading it would know it had not been written by a Frenchman.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Then you must have your letter, as I say, composed from the beginning by a Frenchman, contenting yourself with outlining to him what is to be said.
Yes, yes, yes.
I am assuming that you have in mind to send your letter to a naval personage?
Correct.
That makes the business easier. Businessmen, bankers or merchants with something more important to lose than men's lives are likely to scrutinize documents with great care. Military men are less likely to do so, perhaps. The signature I am confident of reproducing to perfection, with practice. Yes. I believe the ink can be matched in Chancery Lane, and I can make tests. With the printed heading, you will have to have type specially cast.
That can be managed.
To match the paper, I will have to instruct you where to search for that. Would you hold the paper between my eyes and the light? These handcuffs restrict me inconveniently. Oh, thank you. As I thought. If I know that quality of linen. There is a fortunate absence of watermark. That is helpful.
Of course.
Finally, gentlemen, the method of delivery must conform to the method of delivery of other letters of a similar kind. The greatest care is necessary to allow nothing to call any particular attention to this letter of ours, if compared with others.
We have considered that point.
That, I think, is all. Perhaps now I might be permitted to sit down. My legs are not as steady as I could wish.
Take the doctor out, Mr. Dorsey. Give him a comfortable chair and a glass of wine. I dare say he is hungry, too.
Yes, sir.
Might I hope for a beefsteak, Mr. Dorsey? For the past week, empty dreams of a beefsteak have embittered the nightmare of the rope.
Provide the beefsteak, Mr. Dorsey.
Yes, sir.
In that case, Mr. Marsden, you can count on my best exertions on behalf of my king, my country, and myself.
I hope I can, Doctor. For your sake, as well as for ours. So far, so good. I may say, Captain Hornblower, that the First Lord has approved in principle of the attempt you suggested being made. Mr. Barrow, I expect you have in mind some French refugee who can attend to the composition of the document?
Certainly I have, sir. Recapturing the style of the original, of course.
Undoubtedly, Captain Hornblower.
And the orders to Villeneuve must be such that there is nothing in them patently impossible of execution.
Did your grandmother never learn to suck eggs, Captain Hornblower? I have had some years of experience in writing orders for naval operations.
Pardon, sir.
So, Mr. Dorsey, Mr. Barrow, and that fellow Claudius will deal with the details of producing the letter. The next point to consider is the landing.
Well, that should be simple, sir.
You think so?
There are 300-odd miles of Biscayan coastline, sir. Rugged and sparsely populated. There are innumerable inlets. Or surely the Royal Navy can be trusted to put a small party ashore undetected.
I should hope as much, Captain Hornblower. And it is obvious to me that you are the man best fitted to undertake this mission.
I, sir?
You are acquainted with Ferrol, as you told me. You've had experience of Spain. You speak some Spanish.
Only a little.
I fancy it should be enough. And at present, you have no command.
Now, that is true. All the same.
It is not a duty you could be ordered to perform, Captain Hornblower. I must make that quite clear to you. It must be the mission of a volunteer. I know, as of course you know, that you will risk the death of a spy on the gallows.
In Spain, strangulation in the iron collar of the garrote.
I bow to your expert knowledge. A fighting service cannot order one of its officers to risk such a fate. I cannot order, and I will not plead. I only tell you flatly, our need is desperate, and I believe you to be the man who can render England a great service. Now, the decision must be yours and only yours. Take your time. It is only fair to tell you that we have not forgotten Admiral Cornwallis's recommendation that you should be made post. If you decline this mission, a ship can be found for you.
Thank you, sir.
On the other hand, you need not lose post rank if you accept. You could be given equivalent rank in the Sea Fencibles and then transferred for special service.
Well, that's handsome, Mr. Barrow.
Well, it's only fair.
Well, Captain Hornblower?
I'll do it.
You have greatly relieved my mind, Captain Hornblower. As for companions, the Spaniard Miranda, whom we mentioned, is, I am sure, trustworthy. If you need a Frenchman as well, there are at least three who have in the past done valuable and secret work for us.
A Frenchman would be helpful, sir.
Then Mr. Barrow will arrange for you to meet Miranda and whichever of our three French agents he deems the best. And I should be obliged if you would consider and elaborate a detailed plan for my submission to Lord Barham.
Yes, sir.
Orally, if you please. Nothing regarding this scheme is to be committed to paper until your final report after achieving success.
I understand, sir.
I will make the arrangements for your posting to be gazetted, Captain. You'll read yourself in before the end of the week.
I'm obliged to you, Mr. Barrow.
I should wish to add, Captain Hornblower, that I esteem myself fortunate in having made the acquaintance of a very brave man. I can only wish you the luck you deserve.
So, my decision had been made. Of course, I had really had no alternative. It was my duty to accept, just as it had been the duty of Barrow and Marsden to emphasize that I was at liberty to refuse. It was true that they could not order me to what might well prove a shameful and squalid death, yet they could have ordered me to face musketry, climbing the steep side of a ship of the line, or to go aloft in darkness and storm to save a few yards of canvas. They would have expected such orders obeyed without flinching on my part. And rightly. And had I hesitated, they could have ordered me hanged, shot, or even flogged to death as a mutineer. They knew, they must have known, that if I had refused their mission, I would never have been happy again. It was with such thoughts in mind that I sat down to write that long-delayed letter to Maria, which had been nagging at my conscience.
My dear wife, I fear this letter may bring you disappointment, for which I am heartily sorry. I had hoped that once my posting was confirmed, I might have rejoined you, at least for a few days, before taking up my new command. Now this will not be possible. You will see my posting gazetted within the week, but I am immediately ordered on a service of which I can tell you no more than that it will take me abroad almost immediately. You must not be too anxious if you have no further news of me for some time. I should welcome assurance from you that you will take all care of your dear self, of our boy, and of the little one that is to be, so that I may face whatever the future holds with a quiet mind. Your ever affectionate husband, Horatio.
I did not like to think of the expression on Maria's face as she read that letter. It would upset her gravely. So much I knew. At that moment, my feelings with regard to the secretary to their lordships of the Admiralty were hardly suitable to one whose standing was merely that of a post-captain, whose name had still to appear in the Gazette.
I had not thought to have to ask you to call again at the Admiralty, Captain Hornblower. But the First Lord wishes to hear details of this plan of yours from your own lips.
Lord Barham himself?
Yes, he is taking a keen personal interest in the affair. You will please to remember, he is over 80 now, and rather deaf.
And testy, accordingly.
On occasion. I understand from Mr. Barrow you have seen Miranda and the Frenchman?
Yesterday, at my lodgings.
And?
Judgment reserved, Mr. Martin.
Admirable caution. Yes, Mr. Barrow?
His lordship will see you now, sir.
Then I'll lead the way, Captain Hornblower. This is Captain Hornblower, your lordship.
Ah, so I assume. I've looked up your record, Captain Hornblower. It's most satisfactory.
Your lordship is very good.
My lordship at the present moment is very anxious. We want Villeneuve out of Ferrol. We don't want him in the channel nor breaking the Brest blockade. This is where your scheme comes in, Captain Hornblower.
I'm honored that your lordship thinks well of it.
I'd be a fool if I thought otherwise. The plan is sensible. Its execution is, I believe, possible. Oblige me with details, if you please.
Certainly, your lordship.
Mr. Barrow, the map of the Biscayan coast, if you please.
Here, your lordship.
Thank you.
I propose to use one of the inlets about here. Near to Ferrol, but not too near.
Landing by night, I imagine.
Yes.
How many in your party?
I thought as few as possible. I hope for four.
Four?
Yes, sir. The Spaniard, Miranda, the Frenchman, Fagald.
Your choice, Mr. Barrow?
Yes, my lord, Lucien Fagald. You may remember his good work at the Guernsey landing last year.
I do. Well, there's yourself, Captain Hornblower. What about the fourth?
I should like another Englishman, if possible.
Why?
I imagine Captain Hornblower might like someone to talk to in his own language, Mr. Marsden.
Yes, my lord.
Whom have you in mind?
First Lieutenant Bush, your lordship, formerly of Hotspur.
And consequently at present unemployed?
He was cleared at the court-martial, your lordship.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Where is he now?
At Plymouth.
Very well. Mr. Barrow, send express immediately to Admiral Foster to instruct Lieutenant Bush to report himself as soon as possible at Captain Hornblower's lodgings.
Very good, my lord.
And once your party is ashore, Captain Hornblower...
To an extent, we must wait on circumstances, your lordship. Beyond Molinos, here... There is only a single good road to Ferrol. We must ambush the courier at the most suitable place we can find between Molinos and Ferrol. Mr. Miranda tells me that he has a reliable friend in the neighborhood who can shelter the party while we study the routine of the arrival of Imperial messengers. Now, that study is bound to take a few days.
Dangerous, and time presses, Captain. Do we know anything of this friend of Mr. Miranda's?
A woman... So I understand, your lordship.
I don't like that, Mr. Marsden. A woman, and a Spanish woman at that. Sounds fishy to me.
Mr. Miranda was very definite.
He would be. What's his background, Mr. Marsden?
He has been in this country for some years, sir. He came here with the object of obtaining arms and money to foment a guerrilla rising against the French in the Biscayan provinces.
He didn't get what he wanted?
No, my lord.
Why not?
It was felt his guarantees of success were not adequate, my lord.
In spite of which you are including him in Captain Hornblower's scheme?
The personal impression he has made in various quarters, my lord, has been favorable.
Possibly. What impression has he made on you, Captain Hornblower?
His English is good. His manners are pleasant and easy. His hatred of the French seems genuine. I would judge him a practical man.
How much did you tell him of your plan?
Nothing. Beyond the fact that a small party was to be put ashore and that he would be needed to make contacts with the local Spaniards.
Good. Keep it at that.
Ultimately, he will have to know a good deal more than that, my lord.
No doubt. I suggest that he's kept in ignorance as far as possible until he's too deeply implicated to be able to play us false.
I understand, your lordship.
The courier once intercepted, what then?
He must be killed.
I fear so. It would be almost impossibly difficult to substitute the forged dispatch for the one he will be carrying.
I agree. So let us have no fear about it, Captain. This business is worth many more lives than one.
Including those of my party, I know. We shall need to include the uniform of a French imperial aide-de-camp in our baggage, Mr. Marsden, tailored to fit Monsieur Fagald.
Mr. Barrow will see it is provided.
And Monsieur Fagald will deliver the dispatch to Admiral Villeneuve?
If all goes well.
What are our orders to Admiral Villeneuve on behalf of the Emperor Napoleon, Mr. Marsden?
To leave Ferrol instantly on receipt of the order, my lord. To rendezvous with Admiral Gontome off Cape Clear. And to bring the combined squadrons into the channel to cover invasion from Boulogne.
As you will not find Gontome off Cape Clear.
To sail south, Pocket is. This will seem reasonable enough. Admiral Collingwood's squadron blockading Cadiz is too weak to fight Villeneuve.
I know. We must make sure that Gontelme is held tightly in Brest.
Oh, you can trust Admiral Cornwallis for that, your lordship.
Certainly, yes, yes. Meanwhile, Lord Nelson will have come home. He will have to leave again immediately and join Admiral Collingwood outside Cadiz. Then, if Villeneuve comes out, we shall have that pell-mell battle which Lord Nelson has always asked for and which this country needs. It should do.
I hope so, my lord.
It must do. Things cannot go on as they are. No man and no thing, Captain Hornblower, must be allowed to interfere with your success. I cannot make this too plain. Mr. Marsden, be so good as to have the necessary orders put in hand forthwith,
my lord.
And anything which Captain Hornblower requires, placed at his disposal.
This is an unexpected pleasure, sir.
See you again so soon, Mr. Bush.
It is.
Well, come in, come in. Now, whether you still think so when you know what it implies is another matter.
Some special service, I imagine.
Very special and damn difficult, not to mention dangerous.
Abroad, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. On the Spanish coast. Not far from Ferrol.
Ferrol?
We'll have a Spaniard and a Frenchman in company. I've asked Mr. Miranda, the Spaniard, to call on me here this morning. I want your opinion of him.
Mine, sir?
Well, their lordships seem to be sure of him. I find it hard to make up my mind.
Hmm. I saw Mrs. Hornblower before I left Plymouth, sir.
Ah, she was well?
As well as could be expected in the circumstances.
Of course, yes.
I was to thank you for your letter, sir. Mrs. Hornblower quite understands.
I hope so.
If I may say so, sir, a lady in a thousand.
Ah, you're right, Mr. Bush. I only wish... That, I fancy, is our Mr. Miranda.
He sounds vigorous, sir.
Vigorous and eloquent, Mr. Bush.
I wish I liked Don, sir.
Oh, so do I, Mr. Bush.
Come in. Glad to see you, Mr. Miranda. First Lieutenant Bush.
Your servant, Mr. Miranda.
And yours, sir. Your admirable landlady admitted me without question, Senor Hornblower, but of course you expected me.
I did.
And everything proceeds satisfactorily?
I think so.
Mr. Bush will accompany us?
Oh, yes.
We are fortunate. It is necessary only to look at him.
You will think us more fortunate when you know him, Mr. Miranda.
I am sure of that. This Monsieur Lucien Fagald, of whom you spoke to me, he still accompanies us?
Yes.
May I ask what you know of him?
He is a man trusted by my superiors.
I hope that trust is firmly based, Senor.
Do you know something against Fagald?
No. I have met him in the small society of other foreign emigres in this country.
Well?
I hate all Frenchmen. At heart, they are all lackeys of that upstart from Corsica who has made slaves of Spanish gentlemen.
Your private feelings are your own business, Mr. Miranda. I must tell you frankly, you must not indulge them during the enterprise in which we are all engaged. I must tell you also that I am in command and responsible.
That is well understood, Senor. I do not think I would be doing my duty if I did not suggest that it is wisdom to look a little sideways, as you put it, at this Monsieur Fagald.
It is my duty to ask you something, Mr. Miranda, without offense.
Pray do so.
The lady you mentioned will shelter us while we're at Molinas. Is she to be trusted?
Senor, before I came from Spain, I was espoused to the lady. She is to be my wife.
I see. And she lives alone in a small village in the countryside.
The Senorita Pilar Romero has her aunt for duenna and companion. Where else should she live? For 3 centuries, the Romeros have lived outside Molinos. But while the family is noble, it is like my own impoverished. Does that content you?
Are you content, Mr. Miranda, to involve your future wife in an affair which must be dangerous?
For the sake of Spain, Senorita Romero would sacrifice both her happiness and her life, as I would.
Thank you. I trust neither will be necessary.
I still have arrangements to make, Senor, if you will forgive me.
Of course. We shall all meet in 3 days' time in the evening at Portsmouth, the Anchor Inn. The same night, we go aboard the ship which will carry us to Biscay.
You can rely on me. Until we meet again, go with God, Senor.
Good day to you, Mr. Miranda. Mr. Bush, what do you make of him?
It's hard to say.
Try.
Smooth, sir. Damn smooth. It's awkward his not liking this man, Fagal. And if Mr. Miranda don't like the French, I'm not all that fond of Spaniards. And the woman. Now, if you ask me, Captain Hornblower, we've got too many foreigners mixed up in this business.
You, Mr. Bush, are a regular John Bull. Like me. Once across the channel, you see them as all alike, and you don't care for what you see.
I don't deny it, sir.
Well, we'll have to put up with them and make the best of them, Mr. Bush. We can't manage the plan without a Frenchman to speak French and wear a French uniform, and a Spaniard to talk to the natives when we've been put ashore. Those are the facts. Fagal and Miranda have been picked for the job by their lordships in Whitehall. We must assume they know their business.
Yes, sir, we'll hope they do.
They're trusting us, Mr. Bush. We've got to trust them. And that means our trusting Fagal and Miranda. Otherwise, we shall all be in the soup.
I'll do my best, sir.
Of course. You and I can trust each other at any rate.
We can certainly do that, Captain Hornblower.
Very well. Now, I'll give you the details of the scheme. And no word of them to a soul, Mr. Bush. You understand?
I will not pretend that my thoughts, while I was being rowed towards the ship that would carry me from Spithead to Spain, were altogether happy. I thought of Maria and of the child she was carrying. I thought of Villeneuve's ships, of Bonaparte's army at Boulogne, and of England's danger. I listened to Fagal and Miranda jabbering to each other in French. Miranda seemed to have got over his suspicions of the Frenchman, and I felt mighty isolated. Until I remembered Bush, silent, sitting in the stern sheets, solid as Gibraltar's rock. I had seen Mr. Marsden once again to confirm the details of my mission. I had brushed up my Spanish. I had done my best to realize and to face the fact that I was crossing those dark waters in the capacity not of a seaman, but of a spy. Also, I did my best not to remember that too often the fate of a spy was a shameful and hideous death. I looked back at the lights of Portsmouth and the dim outline of the English shore. The game was afoot. Who could tell the issue of it?
From notes left behind by Forrester, it is possible to see how the story would have ended. Hornblower goes through a period of training and a crisis of conscience about becoming a spy. As he is rowed towards the ship that will carry him to Spain, he wonders whether to turn back, but his sense of duty prevails. Forged letters are delivered to the French Admiral Villeneuve, which prompts him to come out of Cadiz and fight. This is what Nelson wants. The course of history is changed with the victory at Trafalgar.
Thank you.
In the Saturday night theater presentation of Hornblower and the Crisis, adapted for radio and introduced by Val Gielgud, the title role was played by John Westbrook, who also spoke the narrative as Lord Hornblower in retirement. John Bennett played the part of Lieutenant Bush, with Norman Shelley as Lord Barham. The rest of the cast was as follows: Captain James Meadows by John McGregor, Captain Baddleston, Wilfred Harrison, Captain Henry Bowden, Roy Barraclough, Mr. Prowse, Joseph Holmes, a boy at Plymouth, John Harvey, Admiral Foster, Graham Tennant, Maria Hornblower, Vida Paterson, Mr. Marsden, John Blaine, Mr. Dorsey, Ronald Harvey, Mr. Barrow, David Marlowe, and Dr. Claudius the Forger by Colin Edwin. The music was composed by Johnny Pearson, and special effects prepared by David Fleming Williams in conjunction with the SAIL Training Association. Hornblower and the Crisis was produced for radio by Trevor Hill.
Hornblower and the Crisis can be heard again at 3 p.m. on Monday.